Welcome back to the Mom Mentality Show. My name is Austin Chadwick and my co-host is Chris Lucian. And today we're going to talk about team and mob decision making. We'll talk a little bit about how it typically works in a mob programming environment. And then we'll also give some kind of coaching tips and tricks for helping teams make decisions. So to get us rolling, Chris, how do you recommend or what's your experiences with mob decision making?
Yeah, so this is kind of an interesting one just from kind of going, you know, way back to the early days and then going back into, you know, then kind of getting closer and closer to leadership roles and things like that. So I have many angles to it. In the beginning, it was more along the lines of just maybe convincing, you know, so like early stages, if you're talking about like levels of maturity, you had early stages and then you had later stages and things like that. And so in the early parts, there would be this thing where, you know, maybe I felt like I had to just explain the direction a lot. I usually don't try and maybe override people, but I try and give lots and lots of facts so the decision's inevitable. That's my convincing style. It was very much like in the convincing realm and not necessarily the coaching realm. As I became more mature with it, then there have been different times where it'll be, I'll take a step back and maybe go in and out of like maybe a technical coaching role versus a interpersonal coaching role versus a mobbing coaching role. And so I've always kind of looked at them as very distinct pieces. And so when I'm in a mob and it feels like the entire mob feels like something can't be done, right? Then I feel like that's a technical coaching role of like, hey, it can be done. And maybe here's a way, you know, here's an example. Now let's do it together and things like that. And versus, you know, people try, you know, clashing or something along those lines and then taking kind of an interpersonal coaching. And a lot, you know, in any case, those could be roadblocks to decision making. And so the decision piece of it comes up as an issue, right? And so it's indecision that really hurts. And so, you know, way back when we would just flip a coin or something like that. And so there was definitely multiple levels and different levels of maturity, but you know, it should feel like if there is an impasse, then it should be a flip a coin. Otherwise, there's kind of some fundamental lack of understanding from either side. I don't know. What about your experiences, Austin?
Yeah, I mean, I think I experienced it maybe earlier in my journey, even before mobbing, which was doing this more agile thing. It's not a project manager or a lead saying like, here's the direction, go implement, you know, you worker bees, right? No, even in the traditional style, it didn't have to have that negative connotation, but it could feel like that, right? And so you'd be on a team and, you know, even without mobbing, there's still a lot of decisions you need to make as a team. You start doing retrospectives and things like that. And then like many things, I think mobbing amplifies it, right? Because it's no longer, hey, how do we decide this big level design? It's kind of like every line of code is almost a decision at some point, right? And so it really makes you work out that muscle of figuring out as a team what to do, right? You know, and so what would be some tips or tricks you'd give for a team just figuring it out, just starting how to do decision making? Do you try to discuss for consensus, and then if you don't reach it, you flip a coin? Do you do Roman voting? You know, do you go with the least privileged voice? I mean, yeah, it depends.
It really depends. It really depends on where, you know, maybe it is. So if everybody's on a team and they've been on the team forever and they maybe have a equal amount of respect for each other and it's really just an impasse, like if people are treating each other kindly, considerately, and respectfully, then the impasse would only be theoretically a technical one, right? It wouldn't be, you know, I think your idea is worse or anything like that. And mm-hmm. In which case, you know, so that's kind of like the best spot to be in. That's almost like a flip a coin situation, or maybe whoever has spoken the least in the last 24 hours in the mob now takes over. If it's something other than that, that's when I notice things kind of getting weird, right? So then that's where some rules came into play of saying, go with the most junior voice if there's an impasse between a junior and senior voice, right? And that's the least privileged voice. So in general, just flipping the hierarchy over on itself. And so a lot of the time what we would say in our mobs was basically let the person with least experience go first or navigate their solution first. And then if there's still an impasse, then do both and then compare. And then if it's still an impasse, then only take the one from the least experienced person. And the reason for that, I think a lot of people have dealt with hierarchical problems in decision-making before. And so if you always overturn the hierarchy, that means that the person with the most experience must explain themselves well enough, explain where they're going and teach it so that everybody understands, oh yes, this is the obvious choice, right? So if you're so sure that it is the best way to go, then you should also be able to, in some level, educate people or find materials online. You know, you don't have to be the one teaching everybody that this is the right way to do things. If you have materials that show, you know, you can appeal to authority of some kind, it just shouldn't be an authority within that mob, right? It should be an intellectual authority, maybe online or something like that, if you're in that space. If you're sure it's going to go wrong and you can prove that it'll go wrong, then just go ahead and do it. That builds a level of trust that, may otherwise, if you don't go that way, then you could build resentment. And then there's also, you know, if somebody is intentionally siloing, that ends up becoming really evident through this process. And so it's very rare that you get somebody intentionally doing anything like this. Usually people are doing this just because maybe it's a personality conflict or something. And so that's why we would put those rules in place. Those are kind of the tips that I have. You know, so first, just start off going with the person navigating should always be the person that's been speaking the least most recently. And mm-hmm. and then if you step that up to be the person navigating, or if there are two ideas that are just like, I don't agree, we can't go that way, and I don't agree, we can't go that way, it's either do both or let the least experienced person go first. And then unless the person with more experience can actually educate everyone around them as to why you wouldn't do that. And so that's kind of the escalation, just kind of coaching away from it through rules that favor basically upending traditional constraints and hierarchies and things like that.
Yeah. And I think it is pretty much in sync with my transition from traditional agile methods to kind of more mob programming. Is I think before mob programming, it was a lot more of, hey, let's debate it out or discuss it in a healthy way with kindness, consideration, respect, and then basically just vote and move on. Yeah. And while that has its advantages, it always leaves some people feeling like, we didn't really try out, my idea didn't really get a shot, or I'm the minority and I don't feel supported. And one thing I noticed after mob programming for a while is that it's much more experimental. Instead of like, we'll discuss like, I want to do A, you want to do B, for a little bit, but then we're usually just like you said, I think just let one be tried, don't talk too long and try it out. And it's amazing how soon, once you get to experiment and out of discussion, almost, I think 9 out of 10 times, it's so obvious what the solution is that consensus comes really quickly. Like, oh, this is working, let's keep going. Or, oh, my idea I just suggested and was really passionate about 2 minutes ago obviously just caused 20 things to not compile, and this is going to be really painful, right? You know what I mean? And so I think I've just seen it on small decisions and in big decisions, the kind of experiment with one or maybe do both has just resolved almost all the decisions, so to speak, and it just becomes obvious and less contentious.
Yeah. I was going to say, just kind of piggybacking off of that. So a lot of it, of just that feeling of inequality, can come up, and most of the time I think that's just the right answer. When I was first mobbing, I feel like I was very senior in the team with some of the ideas that I was bringing forward, and at some point I found that I was navigating all the time, and and everybody on the mob would agree that I should be navigating. And so, but we identified that as a problem, right? Because, you know, one thing is I'd go home every day and my voice would be hoarse and I would like not want to talk at home at all, which my wife didn't like. One big piece of it is that every burden should be shared. The intellectual burden, the vocal burden, like that's one way of looking at it, right? And the other piece of it is that everybody should have an opportunity to shine, right? And so, as long as you have a rough equality going on, and really paying attention to equality on a mob, you then get that whole, you get everybody's ideas kind of flowing into the code. And so if you know how to navigate it, you're the only one that knows how to navigate it, and you've navigated for the last 3 days, I would seriously consider, now that we're kind of in a remote world, I would suggest going to chat. So you only chat to the navigator the direction. And so you stop talking entirely, right? And they have the responsibility of vocalizing it to the rest of the team. And I've done that on occasion. And then, but in person, I would do the kind of navigate the navigator, just whisper to the person like where they need to go, or do a drawing that's on back of a whiteboard that only they can see, and get other people navigating. Because another thing that I noticed that was really interesting was when people are navigating, or when people are not navigating, or maybe even avoiding it, not necessarily intentionally, but subconsciously, a lot of time it's just the comfort with navigation is not there. And so what happens is they don't know the domain and they don't know how to navigate, or they know the domain and don't know how to navigate. And both those situations are very different, or they know how to navigate and don't know the domain. And so in all three of those scenarios, you have to treat them differently, right? If you don't know both, then it might be learning more about the domain and practicing navigation from time to time. If you know the domain and don't know how to navigate, you might need somebody to actually push you to start navigating more. And if you know how to navigate but don't know the domain, then you might be steering the team into some weird spots, right? And so, in each area, so it might be worth, in that situation, it might be worth a discussion and a drawing of the domain concepts before the navigation. But navigation is a skill, and a lot of people just don't treat it that way. And so what you see very often is, even though somebody would be perfectly comfortable with the technical solution, they've never had the opportunities or the time to really have the skill of speaking out code out loud, right? And you think about it, you know, no one's trained in this formally, right? Like, at no point during somebody's computer science education are you ever given a class where it's like, okay, now figure out how to navigate where a variable should go in a file out loud so that somebody else can type it, right? Like that, it just doesn't exist, right?
Right. Oh, most definitely. Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, even some things that would be perceived as a mob decision-making problem could be just what you're talking about. Someone just hasn't had the practice navigating, so it appears like that. I guess the one thing I wanted to share before we close this was kind of like a coaching technique, I guess. I think I learned I was doing it after mobbing with the team for 9 months, and then I left, and then I was talking to one of the mobbers, and he was like, I really appreciated when you did this. And I was like, oh, what was that? And then he told me, and I'm like, oh, I guess I do that, you know? And so if I were to come up with a corny name for it, it'd be like Jiminy Cricket or something like that, where basically you make decisions more cognizant and explicit, right? And so I'm not sure what part of center, enter, turn it makes sense to do it, but it's like you don't even really inject your opinion. You just make it things that the team just does. It's just habit. Like, oh, we just start writing the code and we don't write a test, or we, you know, it could be anything. We don't use a Kanban board and we do this, or we're just going to write an email instead of calling the marketing or customer person. And so it's just like just being there and being like, hey, I see we're doing A. Did you know that B is an option? What do you guys think? And even if you say nothing else, just presenting another option and taking it out of the realm of just habit presents opportunity for innovation or change or improvement. And I think, so for example, something like test-driven development, for a while, so the team that wasn't doing that, and I would just be like, hey, have you thought about this, or refactoring to a pattern? And then I would basically just let them decide. But over time, some of them wanted to try the experiment after seeing like, hey, we could do it this way and that way. And then once people were convinced to try the experiment, then they just wanted to operate the new way after a while. And it's without injecting your opinion a whole lot, just by making people aware that, hey, there are other options here. What do you want to do?
And there's also like this, I've noticed that when people are resistant like that too, sometimes it's just they've never seen an example and it's too scary, right? In some way as well. And so, I'd add on to that, that just finding opportunities to give a quick example of that same concept will then later, a month later, they'll remember it and then actually bring it into the code. And some of that is, related to intentional practice. So, 8 years ago, when working with Woody, like learning sessions had mandatory, direction in them, and it was very much a technical coaching session, and people were learning how to do the unit tests, and there was no unit testing required in the code for production, but you were required to learn how to unit test, right? Inevitably, eventually, unit tests will make it into the code. Like, it's a very gradual thing, and so it depends on, again, how authoritarian you might be in the way that you are working with the team. And so I think, the strategy that you mentioned is really great for situations where responsibility is diffuse within the team. If the responsibility is focused on one person, then, the danger there is coming off way too strong and basically saying, oh, you have to do this in production from now on. And then there's a story that I heard that, there was a manager that wanted 100% code coverage across all their systems. And so one of the developers wrote a test that would essentially treat every line of code like a REPL and basically load the line of code in, run the one line of code from the assembly, and then load it out and then load the next line of code. And it would just always create something that would pass. And so they had 100% code coverage the next day. And so it was a very, very strange thing, but you get stuff like that where, so it really has to be the team's idea to do it, but it won't be their idea until they have the tools, and they won't have the tools until they learn it. So in either scenario, having the equal footing is really important, especially somewhere where it's a diffuse responsibility, and then in a position of like supreme authority or something, the main key there is that if you just shove it down everybody's throats, then you're going to cause a revolted reaction from it, and so it's just important that you keep those two situations in mind.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I agree. If you're making the team more aware of the decisions, there are many things that become your friend, right? Learning time is one, right? It's like, hey, did you know that X is an option? They're like, what the heck is X? You know what I mean? And so they're like, oh, okay, well, if you want, we can do learning time on it, or we can even research right now. I give you a quick example. And then also the whiteboard and diagrams are your friends. I feel like it's like several times a week we have like option A versus option B versus option C drawn somewhere. But the A and B and C always mean something different, but we're always drawing it out so we can kind of see the different options. And so,
And that might be a really important aspect is like, so there's the short term and the long term, right? And so a lot of people are just like, they might think of unit testing in the short term, like we have to do this now and we have to do our whole code base, but really it's you're not going to develop habits that way. It's going to drop, it's going to fall apart, right? And so a lot of this has to be, you have to think to yourself, what's the long-term reaction to this action, right? And so forcing people to do unit testing, the long-term is you'll more than likely not be doing unit testing 6 months later. And so teaching and creating the environment that will make it a natural thing to occur, That's a very different scenario. And so eventually, things like peer pressure to unit tests gradually builds up, as well as, the benefits being witnessed. And all of that has to come organically, and you have to be in it for the long game. If you just try and shove it in all at once, you're really going to be it's definitely the antithesis of like the center enter turn mentality, right?
And I think that's one thing about, I think, growth and organizational change, but it feels like at the center for mobbing for me is you're really investing in people, right? And that long-term thinking helps you think about that, right? Do I just want to get, if unit testing is the example, these 5 lines unit tested today, if that's my whole world and that's all I'm looking at, then yeah, maybe I'll just force it on them, right? But if your thing is to be, hey, I want less bugs in production and I want happier developers and more frequent delivery and that kind of stuff, then you want to invest in people and their growth. And that may mean that those 10 lines are going to go untested for a while, but you're investing in ways that are more likely for the long game, for more code to be unit tested in the long run, so to speak. So I've talked with many people new to mobbing or even not that get frustrated about that. Hey, I disagree with the rest of my mob. I know the right way and they're not on board. And it's just frustrating because I want to see it done today, where it's kind of like, well, this is probably a good opportunity to put on a coach mindset and be like, how can I invest in these people in the long run?
I can't even remember how many people have told me I made my team mob, or I forced my team to mob and then they didn't like it. Right. Like even down to mobbing. Right. And so the sentence should be, I invited my team to mob. I taught unit testing at a lunch. I did these things and gradually just built up the environment. So it's more about finding allies and then helping that work, and creating that environment than just forcing people to do stuff or disagreeing outright and just saying, I hate it that my teammates delete all my unit tests. And it's like, how can we have brought them in more of a safe way?
Or abuse your navigation turn, So I got 7 minutes of rain. Delete everything he just did as the navigator, and we're going to do it this way. All right. I think that's a good time to call it a wrap. So like and subscribe. Give us feedback on YouTube, Twitter, etc. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear what you think of the show. And please share with anybody you think this would help in their team or mob decision making. And until next time, see you all later.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.